Have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? We recently saw a video he made and it was shocking. He's in his 80s and still kicking butt, working out, staying active, and even has plenty of energy left over for his grandkids. He did this by just making one change. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife tried too, and she says she feels 10 years younger. Her body looks leaner and she has energy all day. With the stress of everyday life, on top of the toll all the world's terrible news takes on us, it's more important than ever to stay healthy. My Morning Kick is the way to do it. Chuck made a video that explains everything. Make sure you watch it by going to mymorningkick.com/useful. It'll change the way you think about your health. Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/useful. You won't believe how simple it is.
Hi, my name is Peter, and I'm a prophet in the new novel, American Prophet. I prophesied a natural disaster, a pandemic, and that crazy election. Now there are conspiracies about me. A dude is shooting at me, and the president is threatening me. My story is on Amazon, Audible, and Apple Books. Check it out. Just look for American Prophet by Jeff Fulmer. That's American Prophet by Jeff Fulmer.
Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Katie Halper.
I'm Mary Matte. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. What a crazy week. Campus crackdowns across the country. The Biden administration locking arms with Republicans to smear students protesting genocide in Gaza as anti-Semitic and justifying violence against them. Because why not? Why not? We're committing violence against, unspeakable violence against Palestinians in Gaza. So why not justify violence against people trying to stop their mass murder?
It's the Biden playbook. You've heard of the Russian playbook, the RPB. Well, there's a Biden playbook, BPB. And that is when you smear anti-genocide protests as anti-Semitism.
And someone who's very familiar with being smeared is this week's guest, Jill Stein, who's running for president for the Green Party. And along with her campaign manager, Jason Call, they were assaulted at a recent protest, campus protest against genocide in Gaza. And we're going to speak to them about that and a whole lot more in this week's interview. Let's go to our four basic food groups. What do we have for Democrats suck?
So for Democrats suck, we have a great statement from President Biden's Deputy Press Secretary, Andrew Bates. This is what Biden had to say about the nonviolent student protests and student encampments that are being held. Again, they're nonviolent. The only violence we've seen has come from the police. And here is the statement. President Biden has stood against repugnant anti-Semitic smears and violent rhetoric his entire life. He condemns the use of the term intifada, as he has the other tragic and dangerous hate speech displayed in recent days. President Biden respects the right to free expression, but protests must be peaceful and lawful. Forcibly taking over buildings is not peaceful. It is wrong, and hate speech and hate symbols have no place in America. So thank you, Biden, for telling people what they can and cannot say, for saying the word intifada, which literally means shaking off and is used to mean uprising, that that's hate speech. It's interesting how the media and our political elites have focused on cries for Palestinian liberation, cries for Palestinian equal rights, cries against genocide. They consider that hate speech. But they're okay with the actual genocide that's being conducted by Israel, and they're okay with the actual hate speech we've seen from the counter-protesters. We've seen a lot of hate speech coming from pro-Israel people, and the media seems to be ignoring that. And violence as well, right? Yeah, and we'll get into that later. But that is one piece of my Democrat suck, because that is such a reprehensible statement from Biden. Again, this is such an obvious talking point to try to delegitimize these student protests, these student encampments, all of which have significant Jewish presence there. But again, they have to pretend that this is anti-Semitic because there's no way to defend what they're doing in supporting Israel. And let's hear what White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre had to say about these encampments and protests.
A couple of things. The president is being kept regularly updated on what's happening. As you just stated, across the country, he is monitoring the situation closely. So is his team. And I would just add that no president has spoken more forcefully about combating anti-Semitism than this president. Let's not forget, in 2017, he was very clear what we saw, the anti-Semitic vile that we saw in Charlottesville, on the streets of Charlottesville. He called that out. He called that out. And one of the reasons he stepped into the 2020 election is because of what he saw, is because he wanted to speak out and speak against what we were seeing in this country at that time. Democracy was under attack. Our freedoms were under attack, and we're still fighting for that.
That's such a funny talking point. So you have a career politician, Joe Biden, who's ran for president multiple times. He's always aspired power. He was vice president, after all, under Obama, after he failed to run for president in that same primary against Obama. And now all of a sudden they want us to believe that, you know, him running for president again in 2020 wasn't a part of his like career ambitions to be powerful. It's because he saw some racism at a protest 3 years earlier. It was like, he's like, I got to get in the ring.
I got to get in the ring.
Yeah. It's just so funny. It's like, if you've been chasing power your entire life, literally, you can't expect us to believe that all of a sudden your chase for power yet one more time was motivated by anything differently.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Let's go back to the clip to do her full justice.
But he hasn't just done that by speaking. As you heard from my topper, he's taken action. He's taken action by moving forward with the first ever U.S. national strategy to counter anti-Semitism. More than 100 new actions were introduced, obviously, in that strategy. And that is how seriously this president takes it. And I think what's important here is that he's taken action on this issue.
So there she is comparing nonviolent student protests, which include many Jewish protesters, to the neo-Nazis in Charlottesville who chanted "Jews will not replace us" and killed a woman named Heather Heyer. Those, for her, are comparable examples of anti-Semitism.
And then she touts the so-called strategy they've had to combat anti-Semitism in like more than 100 elements. What elements are there beyond just accusing people who support Palestinian livelihood as anti-Semites? Like what other actions are they taking to combat anti-Semitism?
Right.
This seems to be the only thing that they're doing. It's anybody who protests against mass murder in Gaza, Israel's mass murder came in Gaza, they get called an anti-Semite by the White House.
Yeah, their strategy is to perpetuate anti-Semitism by suggesting that Judaism and Jewishness are intrinsically linked to Zionism. And that, of course, is the dual loyalty trope. It's really fascinating.
Which Joe Biden said multiple times, he said Jews wouldn't be safe if not for Israel.
Right. Yep.
Which is profoundly anti-Semitic. It suggests that, you know, our identity and our rights as people are somehow tied to the existence of an ethno-state.
And Thursday, Congress voted on H.R. 690, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which, to quote Jewish Voice for Peace, weaponizes charges of anti-Semitism against people who are using their voices to advocate for Palestine and legitimate criticism of Israel, which is currently committing genocide in Gaza. The bill will effectively end free speech on college campuses. And this Anti-Semitism Awareness Act was not surprisingly championed by the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, and it'll change what constitutes anti-Semitic harassment by incorporating the definition of anti-Semitism by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance into Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Pretty scary.
You know, there's a common refrain going on right now that it's a hard time to be Jewish. And it's correct. It's a hard time to be Jewish because these monsters are weaponizing Jewish identity to justify mass murder and to demonize anybody who criticizes it. It's for me, you know, it's humiliating. And it's so insane. And people, you know, so many, unfortunately, fellow Jews are acting like complete ghouls and cheapening the history of anti-Semitism in the most malicious way. It's every day gets more embarrassing for me to witness.
Well, I mean, I'm so grateful to organizations like Jewish Voice for Peace and If Not Now, because it's so important politically, morally, ethically, and also for my own self-interest. It's important for the world to see that there are Jews who reject Zionism, despite the claims of Israel.
Well, sorry, Katie. According to Jonathan Greenblatt, head of the so-called Anti-Defamation League, if you're celebrating Jewish Voice for Peace, you're really celebrating a proxy of Iran.
Oh, that is true.
That's literally what he said. In fact, let's watch the tape.
about time that the presidents and these campus administrators across the country started again simply saying, you got to play by the rules. I mean, talk about the height of entitlement, right? Thinking that you can just act with impunity wherever you want. You know, it's funny. We're talking about Iran a few minutes ago. Iran has their military proxies like Hezbollah, and Iran has their campus proxies like these groups like SJP and JVP. That, I mean, look at them. I mean, this is literally like a demonstration in Tehran, and you can't believe it's happening in Morningside Heights. So, as you know, President Shafiq testified before Congress on Wednesday.
Talk about entitlement. This whiny loser has the gall and the entitlement to go on national TV, smear a activist group of, you know, of Jewish people who oppose the occupation, oppose genocide, as being a proxy of Iran, and demand that everybody, all these campus groups, get censored and arrested. I mean, that's entitlement to the extreme. Yeah. And amazingly, his group is cited still as some sort of like expert on anti-Semitism. So they put together this like list of all these anti-Semitic incidents, and it basically, their definition of what that means is basically someone saying free Palestine. Anti-Semitic. Right. You know?
Well, he is an expert in anti-Semitism because he perpetuates it every single day that he pretends that being Jewish means being Zionist.
Man, oh man.
So give him some credit, Aaron. Credit where credit's due.
All right. Well, let's check in on the Republican side to see if things are any better. Spoiler alert, they're not. The Republican response to all this is to basically somehow pretend that Joe Biden is sympathetic to Hamas. That's literally the Republican talking point. And they especially want to go after Democrats who dared criticize the Israeli genocide. So here, for example, is House Majority Whip Tom Emmer.
House Republican Conference is here today to deliver a message to the pro-terrorist anti-Semites taking over our college campuses. We're here to deliver a message to the university administrators who have chosen to be complicit in these movements for hate rather than taking action. And we're here to deliver a message to Hamas, Iran, and members of the squad, including my Minnesota colleague Ilhan Omar, who have all endorsed these anti-Semitic protests, that enough is enough. Accountability is here. Our college campuses should never be breeding grounds for anti-Semitism.
Standing next to him is House Speaker Mike Johnson, who's an evangelical, and evangelicals are notoriously endorsers of views that could be considered anti-Semitic. For example, the belief in the rapture and the belief that, you know, basically things are going to turn around. Things are going to get better when a bunch of Jews in Israel are slaughtered and then Christ will return.
Right. We got to go back there. About 400 of us will be allowed to survive. Everyone, all the other ones are going to be killed and burned for all eternity. That's his Jewish allyship. Thanks. Thanks, bro.
Here's one more ally, Republican Senator and UCLA its fan favorite, Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana.
All he would have to do is pick up the phone and call the president.
By the way, I've never seen Tom Cotton smile in my life. He must be a major Kennedy fan. Look at that grin.
Columbia University, quietly, and say, Madam President, how you doing? Listen, I don't have a lot of time, and I know you're busy. You've got 14 days to get control of your campus, or you're not getting any more federal money. Now, she will pounce on that like a ninja. But Joe Biden hadn't done that. And President Biden is not going to do that. And it's not just because even older people can suck. He's not going to do that because of the raw gut politics, and you know it, and I know it. President Biden is scared to death to alienate the Hamas wing of the Democratic Party.
So they love this talking point that there's a pro-Hamas wing of the Democratic Party because there are people like Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, who oppose the genocide. So that makes them pro-Hamas. And that's the opposition. You know, you think maybe in a healthy democracy, there'd be some organized political force in Congress who could stand up to a president abetting mass murder. But the Republican response is basically to accuse Biden of somehow being complicit in with Hamas and in league with them. And it's just, the whole thing is just, it's so stupid. It's just so dumb.
So these people, I mean, these people are part of the Likud wing of the Republican Party. Not that they'd actually object to that, because they are totally in lockstep with Likud.
Yeah, but so are Democrats too. I mean, Biden's in,
right,
in,
that's
in
true.
The Likud wing too. But
yeah, we're all Likudniks now.
But they all pretend as if there's some difference between them, but they're all exactly the same. And it's a great way to fool people when you're in a democracy, is pretend as if you're actually on opposing sides when really they all have the same policy.
Right. And I think people are seeing through this. I mean, the way that there's the crackdown on nonviolent students is something that I think people thought Biden would prevent or would not happen under Biden. Okay. Some people thought it wouldn't happen under Biden. I think a lot of us thought it would. But I think this is yet another example of how the difference between Republicans and Democrats is negligible. So anyway, let's move on to Isn't That Weird. For Isn't That Weird, let's take a look at a woman who was the victim of a horrible anti-Semitic hate crime. As we'll see, this is a woman who called the police on her attackers.
Yes, they're right in front of me right now. They're really fighting me.
This person is not
in my mind. I need help.
So here she is, Danielle Shalfi. She's a Chicago public school teacher, and she's falsely calling cops on people who are protesting genocide. And she says, I need help. I know that because it's hard to hear. She says, I need help.
They're surrounding me. They won't let me move.
No, no.
They're all just surrounding me. They won't let me move. And you see her right here. She's free to move. And the people around her are saying she can go wherever she wants.
You are free to move. You are free to move. She is free to move.
You are free to move.
She's free to move. She's free to leave. She is free to leave. No one is surrounding her. She is free to leave.
And she's counting how many people are surrounding her and letting her leave. They're not surrounding her, actually.
They're surrounding me. I can think
of she's free to leave. No one is surrounding her.
No one is surrounding her. I'm just walking my dog. I need help. She's free to leave. I'm a Jewish American. I need help.
She does need help. She needs help because she's calling the cops on a non-existent crime. Like, she's standing there for audio people only. She's standing there, not surrounded. She can go wherever she wants. And she is calling the police and acting like she's under attack. And it reminds me a lot of that woman who, remember that woman who called the cops on someone in Central Park who was not committing a crime?
Yes, the bird watching man, a black man who was just, who was out there like watching birds, and she tried to call the cops. She did call the cops on him.
She did call the cops on him, yeah.
Yeah, and she was rightfully mocked for that. I think she even lost her job, but
yeah,
the impunity that Israel supporters have, they don't get the same treatment. And as an example of that, for Isn't That Terrible? So we just saw an example of a Israel supporter trying to, like, you know, start some, like, trying to pretend as if she was under threat when she wasn't. Here are Israel supporters at UCLA viciously attacking people, and police and campus security are nowhere to be found. So in this video, you have Israel supporters chanting and calling for a second Nakba against Palestinians while also being violent against them.
And the Nakba, of course, is the expulsion, the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in 1948.
You're going to block Jewish kids? Yeah. You're fighting back, bitch! Yeah, terrorists! Get your ass facing! Come here, bitch!
So I've been to that encampment at UCLA. It's very peaceful. These are a bunch of young people who, you know, have set up there's a food station where people are donating food, and people are engaging in discussions and lectures, and people have come to speak there. It was really pleasant. And they were attacked by this mob of hooligans who also, and let's watch this video, launched fireworks directly into the encampment.
Free Palestine!
Free! Watch out! Watch out! And imagine how scary that is. You're sleeping in a tent for days to protest the genocide, and there's no one there to protect you. So these mobs of Israel supporters go there, they assault you, they've done all sorts of terrible things. Someone threw a backpack with mice to try to set off mice inside the encampment. There were people there with banana allergies, so people brought bananas to try to like cause an allergic reaction. And then they attacked them directly with fireworks. And as we can see from these videos, there's no campus security, there was no police whatsoever. Basically, the police and security, I think, let this happen. They did not step in for a very, very, very long time. It's extremely dangerous. And it's horrible. Completely normalized. But yet, what is the discourse we get in public, you know, from all these cable networks and politicians? It's that Jewish students don't feel safe. Right. Jewish students don't feel safe. And of course, they're referring to a specific type of Jewish student, a Jewish student who supports genocide.
Right. Not the anti-Zionist Jewish ones don't feel safe.
Yeah, exactly.
They're in protest. Yeah.
They're being attacked. They're being attacked. But so we have not just a normalization of a crackdown of free speech, but a normalization of violence against these protesters. And that's where we're at.
And yet the media is totally silent about it. But also, I think it's worth playing this banana clip just to show how sadistic these people are. Because as you just mentioned, there was an allergy, a banana allergy, right, at an encampment in UCLA. And look at, let's just see how these pro-Zionist protesters reacted to that.
That wasted time. Why don't you go back and help your fucking people?
There's a woman eating a banana, dancing with the banana, and draped in an Israeli flag, just showing off her contempt.
There's so many more clips we can show. There's one clip of a woman yelling at the UCLA protesters, women protesters, that she hopes they get raped.
Yeah, that's a classic. These people bring that one out a lot.
They love to wish rape upon opponents of genocide. They love to do that. And she calls women a prostitute, using a slang word in Arabic.
Sharmuta.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's just the behavior. And then, so on top of that, then you had like turn on TV and everyone's talking about the safety of Jewish students. Jewish students don't feel safe, comparing the peaceful protesters to Nazis. It's truly, I mean, this is, you know, at least in my lifetime, I can't recall something as crazy as this.
Yeah, really, truly.
And it's all on behalf of a foreign state. It's like, if these kids were protesting what the U.S. is doing, I don't think the vitriol on TV and from politicians would be as extreme. It's because it's Israel.
Right.
And Israel's it's so important for the bipartisan establishment. It's protected at all costs, and things are tolerated that I don't even think would be tolerated if these kids were protesting the U.S. government.
I think we're at a historic moment. We're also coming up on May 4th, which is the anniversary of Kent State, where 9 students were shot, 4 students were killed protesting the Vietnam War. And, you know, we've seen snipers. We've literally seen snipers on the top of buildings at Indiana University. And we've seen police, obviously, with guns drawn, enter into Columbia University building. So I really wouldn't be surprised. I hope I'm wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see someone killed.
Certainly the way things have been going, the authorities have been encouraging violence everywhere. Anything bad that happens to these students, to these protesters, it starts at the top. It starts with President Biden, who is demonizing them as anti-Semites. It starts with him and many others in the political media establishment.
Yeah. And make sure you do check out our Thursday Throwdown, guys, because we go through a lot of the clips of the media malpractice in inciting hatred and violence against these peaceful protesters. We are so excited to be bringing to you an interview with Dr. Jill Stein, who is, of course, running for president. She's a Green Party candidate for president. We are talking to Dr. Jill Stein as well as to Jason Call, her campaign manager. He himself is running for Congress in Washington's 2nd Congressional District. And they were both recently arrested at a protest at Washington University in St. Louis. So here is Jill and Jason. Thank you so much for joining, Dr. Jill Stein and Jason Call.
Great to be here.
Pleasure to be here.
So I thought we'd start off by talking about your recent arrest. Let's take a look at the footage of you getting roughed up. Anything you want to tell us before we watch this clip of you getting roughed up in, with weapons, including a bicycle?
I think it speaks for itself. So.
Okay. And this was at Washington University at a protest for Palestine.
I think the thing that I would say prior to this is that there were attempts at de-escalation. We did try and engage with the university administration along with a couple of the aldermen from the Board of Aldermen in St. Louis, really tried to engage with the university administration, and they completely rejected any dialogue.
Disturbing, but not shocking. Okay, so let's take a look.
Hold the line now, hold the line!
Tell us about that experience. Were you expecting that? Was that something you had anticipated?
No, not at all. We had been at a campaign event at the public library, which was a couple blocks away from the university, and there were some wonderful, eloquent students who were there. And afterwards, on our way out, another student invited us to please come and just show support for the students, which, of course, you know, we wanted to show in every way possible. When we got there, we were asked by the students, as Jason mentioned, to please try to help de-escalate, to speak with the administrators. And that was along with the two aldermen or alderwomen, I guess you would say, from St. Louis. Seemed like maybe they cooled their jets for an hour or two, but then they assembled again. A lot of police. I don't know how many bicycles there were, but you know, there were some, and they definitely lined up. And, you know, with one of the bikes coming straight for us, and I was, I had on either side, Jason and our deputy campaign manager, Kelly. And by the way, we were in line because the students asked us to please stand with them. And we were hopeful that, you know, by being there, we could help, you know, help sort of cool things, knowing that there would be a presidential campaign platform kind of live streaming this to the world, which was part of our effort to de-escalate the thing, you know, that the eyes of the world are upon you. We were hopeful that that would sort of cool things. So we saw them coming, and it was like there wasn't even time to get scared. We didn't think something was going to happen. We didn't expect that we were going to be arrested that day. In fact, we had another campaign event to be at, but we felt like we could not say no to the students who were really putting everything on the line. And when they began to assault us with this bicycle, I'm not sure if it was the handlebars that began ramming me in the chest or if it was the bike pedal, but you know, it was. And then they were grabbing us as well. And I'll let Jason describe it from his perspective, because I was mostly obsessed with the bicycle and how to keep from being crushed by the bicycle and how to keep from falling over. In fact, every time I watch that video clip, I feel like I'm being pushed over and about to lose my balance. And it just felt really precarious. I don't know if you can see it in the film, but at one point, the cop who's right opposite of me, he bends down. What he's doing there is grabbing my right leg at the foot and jerking my leg up in order to deliver the knockout blow and to send me, you know, hurling backwards on my head. And I was miraculously able to just like, I had a reflex to like shake my foot loose and to shake my leg loose as he was trying to catapult me backwards, you know, a backflip onto my head, basically. And I was able to get out of that death grip. And at that point, he said to me, "You've just assaulted a police officer," which turned out to be, you know, well, it's unclear exactly what the charges are, but that became clear in our processing too. Go ahead, Jason, why don't you comment?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no doubt in my mind that Jill specifically was targeted. because they were looking and pointing and saying her, she's under arrest. It was almost as if they're saying, get her out of here first. And so you can see, you know, watching the video, you can see they've got their bikes raised. I mean, they've got the frame of the bike where the seat and the handlebars are almost at throat level for Jill, pushing her backwards. And you can see a tall county police officer, taller than me, with a beard on, and you can see him reach over. When you see him reach over, he's got Jill's wrist in his hand. I had to hit him on the arm and say, let go of her, you're going to break her fucking arm. And I had to say that three times to him, and he finally let go. And you can see him point at her, and that's when he says to her, she's under arrest. And so she had the other guy who was pulling at her leg on one side, and that she just described, trying to pull her leg out from under her. I was on the other side of that, so I didn't see that thing go down. What I saw was this big tall guy reaching over the top of the bike, and he was literally trying to pull Jill over the top of the bike while they were pushing the bike into her. And when he finally released, he pointed at her and he said, she's under arrest. So there's no doubt in my mind that they were going after Jill. They knew we were here. We had tried to engage with them directly beforehand with the alderwomen. And the president, Megan Green, the president of the board of St. Louis Alderman, was there with us trying to de-escalate. And I think that they wanted to get Jill out of there. Jill and I were among the very first people taken to the ground, walked out of there and put in the back of the wagons.
And if I can also point out, there was another person who was targeted because he was recording the event. This is Stephen Tamari, he's hospitalized now. And yeah, if you've seen the footage of him, it's absolutely shocking. I mean, it's amazing that he's alive because, you know, not only did they, well, first he was just taking photographs. He wasn't even part of the, you know, of the encampment, really. He wasn't in the circle. He was just photographing it. And you can see on the video, a cop points to him and then several cops mob him and take him down. It's completely unprovoked. It's just because he's photographing. They mob him, they take him down, they very brutally manhandle him and cuff him. And then he appears to be lifeless when they drag him away from the crowd. And what you see is once he's away from the crowd, one of the cops jumps on his stomach with his knee and puts his full weight by the appearance in the video. It's as if that whole weight of this large man is stomping down at the level of his knee. His knee is landing in the abdomen of this professor, this 65-year-old professor, and then he's dragged off to the paddy wagon. And it is just, you know, shocking and horrifying that these are the police forces with a reputation for these kinds of offenses and convictions, actually, for this kind of utter, you know, brutalization for just what appears to be the sheer pleasure, where they are exchanging emails in advance of busting protests about how much they're looking forward to brutalizing people. These are the police forces that the university saw fit to call in to discipline students. It's such a you know, it's such a horrifying reflection of what's going on in our universities. And these are the universities that are contracting with the, you know, with the war profiteers to send weapons of, you know, death and destruction to Gaza.
We actually have that clip. And this is at the same, so people are clear, this is the same campus where you were assaulted and arrested.
We didn't see this at the time, but I met up with him because we then were separately processed after we all went through the processing at the county jail. He and I got diverted. He was the only other person I saw in there that were being fingerprinted and mugshot and, you know, done like as if we were going to have an intake. And it seemed as though we were going to be booked for the jail and we were going to be there for I don't know how long. And, you know, and he and I talked at that point, and he had no idea why he was assaulted. And I'm just amazed after what he went through that he was able to like walk around and talk. But apparently, you know, I don't know what shape he's in right now, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if he had some serious internal injuries.
Yeah.
I wanted to add one more thing also is when they, it took about four or five cops to bring me down, and they had a knee in my back. I was terrified when you have you know, a cop kneeling on your back and you literally cannot get a breath because you've got a lot of adrenaline going through you. When they finally got me up, because they did let me up, I had to, you know, as much as I could yell at them, I can't breathe. And I knew those were the words to say to have them, but I literally could not breathe for, you know, it was probably not more than 15 or 20 seconds, but it felt like a lifetime. When you can't get a breath and you're in that situation. And I thought to myself, my God, George Floyd went through this for 9 minutes. It was absolutely terrifying being in that situation and not being able to get a breath.
And by the way, these techniques of policing, you know, are being systematically taught to police forces all over the country through these programs that bring the Israeli occupation forces together with our police forces, the FBI, ICE, et cetera, to, you know, train them all in techniques developed suppressing, you know, and crushing Palestinian life.
We're going to return to that in 1 second. Let's just take a look at this footage of Professor Tamari getting assaulted. He's in the orange jacket. They are pointing at him.
He's repeatedly stomping on a gun.
Just quickly, as horrible as it is to do that to someone's back, it's even more dangerous to do that, you know, to their belly, because you're going to rupture their liver or their spleen or their gut. I mean, that is unbelievably dangerous.
Right. And Jill, of course, Dr. Jill Stein is a physician, so you obviously understand this particularly well. But apparently he reported, or his wife said that he or his wife said that the doctor, because he was hospitalized after, and the doctor said he was lucky to be alive because his lung could have been punctured.
Exactly. His lung and a whole lot more, too.
Right. So the question is, why is the state... And then I definitely want to talk about the connection between the Israeli forces and the American police forces and military forces. But why is it so important for this government to be repressing these protests with the ferocity with which they are repressing it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a big challenge to empire. As Ronald Reagan's Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, said, you know, Israel is the unsinkable battleship for the U.S. in the Middle East. And this genocide represents kind of the ultimate expression of Israel being given full support for whatever Israel wants to do. In fact, in many ways, President Biden has handed over the baton. He's passed over the baton of being commander in chief, even of our country, to Bibi Netanyahu, who kind of has the authority to go ahead and start a war with Iran if he wants, no prior consultation required. And, you know, U.S. support and funding and diplomatic cover is going to be there. So, you know, this is what empire looks like. And it's a huge challenge to U.S. empire fundamentally for people to be calling this out and demanding that genocide end, and that the whole relationship of Israel and the U.S. as partners in this genocide that is empowering Israel to kind of carry on the abuse that it does. So this is a very big challenge. And unfortunately, the universities are then also embroiled in this, because their funding is coming both from billionaires, you know, and Zionist donors, as well as from the war contractors. So again, it's like a reflection of the militarization of our economy too, which is why the colleges largely don't want to challenge this.
to add to that, you know, sort of war machine writ large here. And Katie, you know, I'm running for Congress in Washington's 2nd District, where Boeing is the largest employer in my district. And the guy that I'm running against, a quote unquote good Democrat, takes, you know, most of his funding from the war machine and the fossil fuel industry. Those students were there. Their one demand, they had one demand. They wanted Washington University to divest from Boeing. About 30 miles outside of St. Louis, Boeing manufactures munitions that have been proven to be used in the atrocities and the genocide in Gaza. And they did not want their tuition money and their association to be with the university's association to be with the war machine. So, you know, beyond the association with Israel, and it is this sort of war machine writ large here, that the students are asking, you know, we don't want to have this association for our education and our future. I think that there is, you know, just widely, why are our educational institutions so partnered with these military contractors?
So, Jill, you're running for president. I want to ask you about the response of our political leadership. We've just had this crackdown at several campuses, City College of New York, Columbia University, hundreds arrested there. And then you had at UCLA, a violent attack on the Gaza Solidarity encampment, fireworks being launched at the encampment, people being beaten, and campus security and police were nowhere to be found. A really dangerous situation. And what happened right before all this? You had President Biden coming out with a statement accusing these college students of anti-Semitism. You also had Republican politicians basically calling these young students Nazis. Here, for example, is House Speaker Mike Johnson.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. I think when you're calling for the extermination of a race of people, which is exactly what many in the crowd are calling for, the reason Hamas endorsed the protest at Columbia University is because they were using Hamas talking points. They're talking, when they chant from the river to the sea, you understand they're talking about the elimination of the state of Israel. They were putting posters onto placards and telephone poles and trees around campus that is actual imagery that the Nazis used in the 1930s, literally the same symbols and messages they're putting up. This is not the free expression of ideas. This is not the use of the free marketplace of ideas for debate that would be healthy on a university campus that's envisioned for a place of higher education. It is the opposite. This is threatening, violent, inciting speech, and it's dangerous.
And by the way, in addition to Mike Johnson, 21 Democrats signed a letter to Columbia, telling the Board of Trustees to act decisively to end the encampment or resign.
And calling the encampment anti-Jewish.
Right. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
So it's a totally bipartisan vilification. Yeah.
We have been to a number of these protests now, and by invitation, we were at the University of Missouri in Kansas City, and there were signs saying, you know, anti-Semitism is not acceptable here. The people at these protests have been, you know, kind and loving and, you know, welcoming, and I have not seen any anti-Semitism. There's anti-Zionism. There's anti-occupation, there's anti-imperialism, but there's been no anti-Semitism. In fact, counter-anti-Semitism speech has been prevalent there.
What do you make of Congress just passing another $95 billion for warmongering, including $61 billion for the proxy war in Ukraine, I believe $24 billion for Israel's genocide? You had Democrats, some of them voting against the Israel component, but every single Democrat voted for the Ukraine money. Not one Democrat, including those who called for diplomacy with Russia over a year ago, voted against this funding for Ukraine in the House. In the Senate, there were a couple, and those senators made clear they were doing so because they opposed the Israel funding. But in the House, zero Democrats who could vote against $61 billion more for the Ukraine proxy war. And the only people who voted consistently against both components, the Israel money and the Ukraine money, were Republicans, a handful of them. So, Jill, what do you make of the left ceding so much ground here when it comes to standing up to militarism?
I think it, you know, it makes a mockery of this concept of the lesser evil. You know, the lesser evil, like compared to what? You know, the Democrats who were supposed to be the less militarized, who were supposed to be standing up for our rights of free speech and resistance to censorship, who were supposed to be defending the rights of immigrants, you know, who've now adopted the slurs and the policies of Republicans as well along the border. You know, the system has just made a mockery of itself, and we're really encouraging people to break up with this abusive relationship, this abusive political relationship where people make excuses for continuing to stay with their abuser, like, oh, it'll get better next year, or oh, they had to do it, or oh, they're the lesser evil. But the lesser evil thing just doesn't hold up to the light of day. Look at what's happening on our campuses. Look how people are being assaulted and beat up by police simply for asserting their constitutional rights of free speech and the right to protest. This kind of brutality is what fascism looks like. Genocide is the trademark of fascism. You know, it's the hallmark of fascism. So we don't have to wait for Donald Trump to get to fascism. And in fact, remember, the most extremist forms of the Republican Party have been funded by Democrats, including Donald Trump himself, who got his start as the so-called Pied Piper candidate, funded by Hillary Clinton, and, well, I should say promoted by Hillary Clinton and lifted up by the Clinton and DNC campaign. And they've continued to do that. In the midterms of 2022, it was some $50 million that was being spent to lift up the most extreme Republican candidates with the idea that they would be easier to beat in the general election. So, you know, the evil of both parties is so intertwined right now, it really can't be separated. And to my mind, this is the imperative for, you know, ending this abusive political relationship, because in the words of Frederick Douglass, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. You can't hide behind a lesser evil and still make a demand. Democracy needs a moral compass. It needs a vision forward. It needs an agenda. And you don't get that by, you know, hanging back beneath the veil of the lesser evil. And the companion quote from Alice Walker, that the biggest way people give up power is by not knowing they have it to start with. This is an incredibly powerful moment. According to Reuters, it's 68% of Americans who abhor this genocide, who want an immediate ceasefire and a diplomatic resolution. 100 million Americans who are locked into medical debt, 44 million into student debt. You know, there are going to be three pro-genocide, pro-war, anti-worker campaigns on the ballot: RFK, Trump, and Biden. There will be one and only one anti-war, anti-genocide, pro-worker, and pro-climate emergency campaign. That's us. There are other wonderful proponents of that agenda, but they are not, they do not have a path forward, and they're not on the ballot in significant numbers and really do not have a way to accomplish that. We have 75% of that work done right now. So there, it's going to be four candidates, and there will be one of us, and there will be three of them. They could very well wind up splitting the pro-genocide vote. And if you're dividing a vote up four ways, it can be won with as little as 26%. We're now running 8% in Wisconsin, the most recent poll, and 22% for people 30 and under, 18% under 45 to 30. So, you know, our numbers have only just begun to come up. People are in a perfect storm right now for just changing our political landscape. In fact, people are screaming for it and clamoring for it. So this is a tool we can continue to use, even if our campus, in encampments are being shut down. It's important for us to struggle and to use all those tools of struggle and not give empire and oligarchy a pass, not in any, you know, dimension of our world, because this is a moment of power. If we seize the moment, and we mobilize to actually, you know, act together in concert to achieve that power.
You know, when it comes to ballot access for you, I remember, you know, in previous campaigns in which you've run, there've been all sorts of shenanigans by Democrats, especially to keep you off the ballot. And you've also been arrested. This isn't, you know, recently is not your first time in handcuffs. I remember at a debate at Hofstra University, you were arrested for trying to take part in a debate. So as we start to wrap, what sort of shenanigans are your opponents up to this time to keep you off the ballot and off the debate stage?
Well, you know, their lead shenanigan organizer, Mark Elias, who was the lead counsel for John Kerry's campaign. And then after that, he led the charge against Ralph Nader and coordinated in a way that's probably illegal the services of multiple, you know, legal firms across the country, so that Ralph Nader was facing something like, was it 20 simultaneous lawsuits to throw him off the ballot?
Mark Elias, by the way, was Hillary Clinton's lead attorney when they tried to frame Trump as a Russian agent. And you got thrown into that whole thing too.
Well, isn't that interesting? And he was also the lead attorney on the dirty tricks that were used against Matthew Ho, the anti-war activist running for Senate as a Green. And I don't know if you heard about this, but it speaks volumes about their brilliant strategies. They called, that is Mark Elias's team of dirty tricksters, they called people who had signed Matthew Ho's petition to put him on the ballot in North Carolina. They actually called them up impersonating Greens as they made the call. And they pretended to be the Green Party that was telling people to please take their name off of Matthew Ho's petition. But in all their, you know, genius, they happened to call the chair of the Green Party in North Carolina, who had the presence of mind to put on a recording device. And he actually recorded this conversation where they were impersonating the Green Party, calling the chair of the Green Party, telling him to take his name off the petition. So, that recently went to court and they were found guilty. They were fined. This is what they do. They've already declared that they have an army of attorneys that they will be using to practice similar dirty tricks. They described it as, I think, highlighting the unsavory aspects of the character of the, you know, of the challengers, which is another way of saying, you know, they're going to just go all out for smear campaigns. And they go ahead, Jason.
I was going to say what they did in New York alone was a dirty trick. Andrew Cuomo slipped in an election law into a budget bill in 2021. That tripled the amount of signatures needed. So now, rather than 15,000 signatures that we needed in 2020, they have made it 45,000 signatures. And as you know, when you are doing petitioning, they need 45,000 valid signatures, which means we need to get, you know, upwards of 80 or 90,000 raw signatures. And that in itself, you know, is a manipulation of, to keep people off the ballot. So, anyone who is listening who can help us in New York with petitioning, we absolutely need your help.
Yeah, it won't take, you know, again, we have 75% more than that of the work done. We are close to pushing through and we really encourage people. If you're in New York State, you can help carry a petition. You can certainly help sign one. And even if you're not in New York State, if you can get to New York State, you can help carry a petition and get in touch with us at jillstein2024.com. This is the perfect storm for political uprising. In fact, it is in full swing right now. And this is the time to ride that tsunami and, you know, push for the change that we desperately need. We need it more urgently than ever, and it's more possible than it's ever been. So this is really a very magical moment to, you know, to rise up for an America and a world that works for all of us. It is within our reach if we, if we stand up with the courage of our convictions.
Well, let's talk more about how these brave students are demonized. I want to go to one example from New York, because to justify this massive show of force against people, it was very obvious what was going on. There was an attempt to paint them as, you know, radicalized, as having some sort of nefarious ties to extremism, maybe even terrorism. And this came from people like New York City Mayor Eric Adams, who gave a press conference where he said that these students are not just college students out there protesting, a foreign policy issue. They've been co-opted by outside forces. So this is what Mayor Adams said.
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiotspodcast.com.
Very exciting to talk to Jill Stein. So refreshing to hear someone who exists outside of the corporate duopoly.
You know, candidate interviews can sometimes be kind of a snooze in my experience, but Jill Stein is a huge exception because she actually has principles and she is out there fighting for decency and trying to raise all these issues that are just completely buried by our, you know, duopoly, by our bipartisan establishment. So kudos to her and everyone who is involved in her campaign. It's very hard to do what they're doing. They get attacked in so many different ways. You know, today we talk about how they were physically attacked at a protest, but there's also all the ways in which they're maneuverings to take her off the ballot and to silence her. So really great to talk to her and to Jason Call.
Aaron, you said she's fighting for decency. I just want to correct you. We already have a decency president, as we learned from the White House Correspondents' Dinner and Colin Jost's wonderful emceeing, where he said that his grandfather voted for Biden because he's the president of decency.
I apologize to all the decent genocide supporters out there.
Yeah.
For forgetting Biden, because if there's one thing that, you know, denotes decency, it's supporting mass murder of a defenseless population. So yes, apologies.
Apology accepted on behalf of Colin Jost and President Biden. Well, thanks, guys. This has been great. Make sure you subscribe to us so you get to see our Thursday Throwdown, where we go through some truly embarrassing, humiliating, but important examples of media cheering on genocide. Sounds like a great time, right?
It's a great time. UsefulIdiotsPodcast.com is the website. Go there, support the show, keep us going, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For extended episodes, bonus content, and our weekly Thursday Throwdown episode, please subscribe at UsefulIdiotsPodcast.com. Support the show for free by subscribing on YouTube, Rumble, and wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the podcast, don't forget to rate and review. You can also follow us on Twitter at UsefulIdiotPod. Thanks for supporting independent media. We'll see you next time.